Good afternoon. My name's Tom Bolger. I was asked to chair the meeting today because Catherine Hudgens could not be with us today. I know we've been here a long time. Could I have quiet, please, in the room? Oh, it's one of my colleagues. Mr. Downey. Mr. Downey, can you please take your seat?
It's a tough crowd here.
All right, today we have two information items before the committee, just two items. The first one on the agenda is an initiative that supports the Momentum Strategic Plan, in which we have been briefed on previously. The transitway in Virginia is especially significant because it represents a cooperative effort between Metro and our partner jurisdictions and will be the first of its kind. And I'm going to ask the team, Jim, to kick off the presentation, and I'm going to ask my colleague Mary if you want to ever say anything about this great project, you just jump in. Jim Hamer.
Hi, over here. Jim Hamer. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to tell you the story about Crystal City Potomac Yard and what two sibling jurisdictions have managed to do and accomplish. And it's also a really positive story about the opportunity to integrate land use planning and transportation planning to come up with a solution that serves the needs and the visions of two communities trying to define and evolve in a positive way. Today we'll talk about the project, we'll talk about the service, and then Ms. Barasox will speak to the branding that we will be utilizing. I do want to acknowledge Marty Ann Reinfeld, the division chief for transit services in City of Alexandria, as well as Matt Houston, senior planner with the Bureau of Transportation, Department of Environmental Services at Arlington County. They are both subject matter experts and here to answer any of the jurisdictional questions that we're unable to respond to. They're right there. Thank you very much. So the corridor that is defined by this project, Crystal City Potomac Yard, if we'll move to the next slide, is a five-mile corridor running from Pentagon City, Crystal City at the north end, all the way down to Braddock Road at the south end. This area formerly was a railroad yard. Some of you may remember when Governor Wilder and his buddy Jack Kent Cook talked about building a stadium there. Lieutenant Don Beyer had a ceremony to talk about the opening of a metro rail station that would be built and funded completely by private development. Both of those visions sort of slid to the past because, as they've done for over 250 years, the citizens in the area spoke their mind and really challenged the jurisdictions to come up with a land use plan and a transportation plan that would serve that without degrading the adjacent communities or the region. And so they were very sensitized to the issues. So what was developed through two similar but separate processes, one in the county called a phased development site plan, which had steering committees and topic subcommittees and years of analysis leading up to what's called a phased development plan, setting the requirements for the developers, as well as in the city, they developed a small area plan and they went through extensive public engagement. We in Arlington were jealous because their developers served crackers and cheese at their meetings. We just got water bottles. So they had their own unique approach to it. And what evolved out of this was a need to achieve a mode share for transit, and that was defined by a number of riders per day, and recognized that there is a mile between the Crystal City and the northern end of Potomac Yard metro station. It is not walkable. You need some form of transportation to connect to Metrorail. And it's 4 miles down to the Braddock Road Metro Station. Yes, there is a National Airport Station, but it's on the other side of the main CSX line, the Metro Rail line, four-lane parkway, and really was not accessible to this location. So the challenge was, how do you connect to the region, but also how do you provide transportation within the corridor, recognizing that Jefferson Davis Highway, the main four-lane road that connects the communities, the two communities together, is really at maximum capacity in peak hours, and whatever development comes has to displace existing traffic and live within the current capacities. I do want to acknowledge that this particular project has its lineage directly from a study, a joint legislative study that was sponsored by two freshman state senators, Patsy Tyser and Mary Margaret Whipple, to give some scale of how long we've been planning this. And what evolved from that was this transitway designed to actually be the first dedicated rights-of-way fully integrated into the community to draw a separation from the Shirley Highway bus or the HOV lanes on John Hanson Highway or I-270. And it's going to be owned and operated by the city and county as normal roads and traffic infrastructure are. But as part of this, we intend to develop an off-board fare collection program so that this, as is done on other premium transit services, trying to speed up the boarding process, get all that taken care of when the bus pulls up, all doors open, you can enter and exit, and we'll utilize a proof of payment system. Daily supervision of the service and the operation of the transitway will be done by Metro staff as the operator of transit service there. But there will also be other public transit services, especially in Arlington, that will be able to utilize available slots within the schedule to be able to take advantage of the dedicated rights-of-way to move through the corridor. Moving on to the next, this chart here represents the operating service plan envisioned when both sides of the transitway are completed. As you can see, the intention here is to operate similar to the frequencies of Metro Rail, so there'll be a 12-minute service running the full length of the corridor with supplemental service in the core area, the 9S route, to provide 10 buses per hour per direction to meet the demand to connect between the Metro Rail stations and, let's see, I think it's 4 million square feet of development in Arlington and about 10 million in Alexandria. These will operate 7 days a week. Weekdays will be 5:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. Saturdays will be 6:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. and Sundays will be 7:30 to 11:30. Again, going back to that transit lifestyle, the intent here is that people can live and shop and work and play and entertain within the corridor without ever having to utilize a car. On the next slide, you can see several depictions of the types of stations that will be part of the service facility. The transitway opening is scheduled for spring of next year and will initially operate from Braddock Road all the way up to Crystal City. It has two segments. One is Braddock to the city line, essentially at 4 Mile Run, and the other from 4 Mile up to Crystal City. Let's see, the expanded service, as I mentioned, 9X will be the all-day, everyday service, and then the 9S will be the supplement in the core area. And moving on to what's actually happening out there on the streets, you can see Alexandria has been pouring concrete in the transitway. They have a 0.8-mile segment on Jefferson Davis Highway between Potomac Avenue and East Glebe in the median of Jefferson Davis that is actually being constructed, and you can see the running way as well as the stations. There will be 33 high-quality accessible service platforms in about 20 station locations to provide the connections And since we're dealing with new development, the station locations are designed into the community with accessible pathways and appropriate amenities and space to accommodate. Also, completion in Alexandria is set for next winter. Arlington's at 100% design right now and preparing bids for construction to complete next year. Arlington and Alexandria have designed and built the transitway and customer facilities, representing a $38 million investment in all of the infrastructures and vehicles, funded through grants and CIP and developer commitments to the project. The next slide, the enforcement of traffic, parking, transitway use restrictions is the responsibility of the jurisdictions that own the facility. We'll be working with them. The traffic violations, the parking enforcement, as is normally done, is done by the city and county police, as well as Metro Transit Police, as relates to transit services. Metro will be providing the enforcement for the proof of payment fare system, and we'll be working to devise exactly how that works so that it becomes a scalable precedent for hopefully use as these type of facilities are built elsewhere. So with that description of the facility and the services, I'd like to hand the mic over to Ms. Barasox to talk about the look and the brand.
Thank you, Jim. I just want to add my recognition and thanks to Marty and Matt and Lynn and Bee, who are here on behalf of the city and the county. This has been my first opportunity to work so closely with jurisdictional staff on a project, and I have been really encouraged and energized by the passion and enthusiasm they have for this project and their commitment to bringing state-of-the-art transit to the constituents in the County of Arlington and the City of Alexandria. And it's been a terrific partnership, and I've appreciated the work with you all over the last few months. We have had a joint project team that's been evaluating the service characteristics, and as you do in any good branding exercise, started with the attributes of the service, because branding is really just a state-of-the-art term for what the attributes are of the service and how you want to communicate them to the customer. We identified some brand elements that we thought were important to communicate, including convenience, speed, and a certain cool factor associated with premium transit service that would be the first of its kind in this region, particularly the portion using dedicated bus lanes. We also needed to look for a name that would connect with the transitway corridor so that the brand identifier for the line, the Braddock Road, Crystal City, and ultimately Pentagon City corridor, and that connectivity to Metro Rail would be able to be underscored in the marketing of the service. We conducted, with my colleague Allison Simon's help, three focus groups in January, and we included participants, importantly, from Maryland, the district in Arlington, and Alexandria, and I'll explain a little bit about that in a minute. One group we had were riders who used public transit along the corridor, the transitway corridor, several times a month. The second group were regional transit riders, and the third group were stakeholders whose names were provided by Arlington and Alexandria, who had been engaged and interested in the project. We also wanted to test the concepts with regional riders beyond the Virginia corridor, so that the brand can and will be used and usable in other transitway corridors throughout the region as they come online. We collected the customer feedback from those focus groups, and we used them to develop several different design concepts and graphic elements. And as a second step, we then went online, and we conducted research open to all for participation. The survey was promoted through the media and, of course, through Arlington and Alexandria in their outreach to community organizations, civic groups, and local transit advocates. We offered the survey in both English and Spanish. One-third of the participants at the end of the day lived in the jurisdictions where the service will be provided. When we looked at the data geographically, there were really no substantive differences in responses between residents in Alexandria and Arlington and residents elsewhere in the region, and the demographics were fairly representative of the region overall. We had 3,717 respondents to the online survey, which was a very robust response rate. We had 34% of those from Arlington and Alexandria, about 30% from the District of Columbia, and 11% from Montgomery County. The next slide, you will see that Metro Way is the name that was selected for the bus service. It's represented here in this slide using the tranquil, popular blue color that was strongly favored by 75% of our future riders. The implied arrow graphic expresses a sense of movement and can be interpreted in many positive ways. Some saw it as a cityscape. Some saw it as a musical pulse. Others see it as just a graphic element, but in any case, it is a distinguishing characteristic that we think stands out from other metro and local provider offerings. We think it's recognizable and noticeable from the street. Customers who are waiting for the premium bus service to come along will spot it and know which bus that they are boarding. The marketing plan that is beginning to be developed now in anticipation of the service start will support the Metroway name by communicating the key brand attributes and will be, again, combined and linked with the location identifier of the Crystal City Potomac Yards Transitway. The Metroway name was the top choice by the greatest number of online survey participants. And next steps are that the final design will be carried over into station signage and customer information materials. The design also contemplates, obviously, again, that we could use it anywhere in the region, and, again, the corridor location identifier could be specific to Montgomery County, as they are contemplating a bus rapid transit service and other locations, and it would still be Metro Way in that corridor. Jim, you want to talk about the next steps?
Certainly. As we move to conclude actions before us, as we have about 12 months until service actually begins, the buses that the board authorized in action on January have now gone to the production line, so they are in production and will be here in plenty of time for the new service. We'll be continuing to work on developing the line name and the complementary materials and marketing program to really introduce the service and make sure that the target community understands its purpose and role. And we'll also be working to support the development of all of the support services, the real-time passenger information signal priority management strategies, and all of that necessary to make this function at the premium level, and the innovations related to the off-board fare collection and the procedures that go with that. And so that gives you the background of the project, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Before we do that, we're going to have the minutes approved after the presentation, because we were Mort was making so much noise I couldn't get the, I blame it on somebody, but if that's okay, I'd like Mary, would you like to christen this project again?
Well, I'm really happy to be at this day. I know if Mr. Ewell were here, Mary Ewell were here, he would be saying the same thing, noting that it was Senator Whipple and Senator Tyser, who I think Mary Margaret started in the Senate 18 years ago, gives you just an indication of how long complicated things like this take, and how much dedication our staff has to kind of stick with it, as well as Metro, to make this. But I think this is a good example of the kinds of partnerships that we will need as we move forward, and hopefully the lessons learned here will help us move more rapidly forward in the future. The other thing I would say is it is important to say, in the context of this board, repeat what Jim said, which is $38 million of jurisdictional money of one sort or another went into building the infrastructure so that these buses can run in dedicated lanes with you know, the kinds of stops and the other kinds of things that we think go with this premium service. So jurisdictions have to be committed, you know, and Metro's job is service, not necessarily the infrastructure. And I think as we continue to talk about priority corridor networks, bus signalization, all of those things, we have to build these strong partnerships with our jurisdictions, and we have to plan so that we have the money at the right moment so that we can actually execute. And so I just think, you know, this is a real, I think, indication of true partnership. So we're glad, and I can never talk about this without saying that in Arlington we look forward to running streetcar on the 9S part of this.
Yeah, just make it clear in mind. Could you put the map back up? Yeah. Could you identify for me which sections generally are in the exclusive right-of-way and which are otherwise?
All right. The exclusive right-of-way begins down here where Potomac Avenue is. Mm-hmm. That travels the length of Jefferson Davis. Eventually, it will include an extension up to Reed and all the way up to 4 Mile Run. But for now, there's a transition into existing roads. And then in Arlington, beginning at 4 Mile Run, the intersection with South Glebe, moving all the way up to
26th Street South. And at that point, there are diamond lanes on the Crystal Drive, and then dedicated on Clark Bell Street, and then as the infrastructure connecting to Pentagon City, initially it'll be on the road, but as 12th Street gets developed through, then that'll also become a transit corridor.
Thank you.
And, about 80% total, four out of the five miles.
I mean, this gets to a debate that goes on around the country as to what does bus rapid transit mean? And truly, with that much dedicated right away, this will be one of the first real examples and a great test of how well it works. I just had one other question on fare collection. Will there be a joint fare that's paid between the bus service and rail service? And if so, how does that get collected?
Well, that's a detail that we're working on. The assumption is we'll take advantage of the regional partner infrastructure that does distribution between transit operators and rail and bus, and that will take provide the answer to that question.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to say one thing that we talked about in our conference call was that you know, this project, wonderful, Mary, and if Mayor was here, but you know, the interconnection to heavy rail, I think it's four or five stations, Lynn, is that correct?
Braddock Road, Crystal City, and Pentagon City ultimately.
Okay. And that makes this not only a sub-regional project, but gets you hooked into the whole regional network, and I think that's a wonderful thing that we should be encouraging in future projects. Oh, sure, Mr. Downs. Go ahead.
Could you put a transit station back up? I want to say, Mary, that I thought the coverage of your bus stop was grossly unfair. And I want to encourage you, everybody who has looked at successful light rail investments or BRTs, knows that transit stations, as opposed to bus flags, are a critical part of differentiating this new mode of transportation. It's not just the dedicated right-of-way, but it is treating customers differently with in-station information, weather protection, direct access to the vehicle, ticketing, and that you're doing the right thing, and it's an essential element of the long-term success of both the BRT and light rail. So I wanted.
Well, thank you, Tom, and we would not disagree with anything that you said. And I really want to thank Rich, Mr. Sarles, for agreeing to collaborate with Arlington to take a look at what actually happened. This was a very long lead time on this project, almost 10 years. So there, and I don't know all the reasons. No, at this moment, no one does. But the station along Columbia Pike were to support Pike Ride. They had nothing to do with streetcar or with BRT. They had to do with the fact that 16,000 people a day ride on the Pike, and they deserve access to information, and they deserve a big enough place to wait for the bus to come. So I think we'll learn some things in this deconstruction of what happened. Arlington still does have the money for the other stations that we hope to eventually have 24 stations up and down the Pike. And, of course, the ones in Crystal City will have the character that is that matches Crystal City and on into Alexandria. But we couldn't agree more that bus riding and streetcar riding riders deserve the same kinds of amenities that we're able to provide in the metro system. So.
And they're transit stops.
They're transit stops. That's right. Many things will stop there.
Any more questions of the team?
Mr. Chairman, while they're changing chairs, would you like me to move approval of the minutes?
Yeah, well, that's fine. Would Mary, would you move the minutes and we get
so
that out of the way?
I'd be so happy to move the approval of the minutes.
All in favor of the amendments, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Mary, because I'll forget again. All right, so we have Chief Performance Officer Andrea Burnside is here with our vital signs report for the first quarter of calendar year 2013, in which Andrea has reports that 10 out of our 12 performance measures show improvement. We want to hear about the two that aren't improving. And well, it's a long day. All right, so Andrea, go ahead.
You're stealing my show.
No, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to members of the committee. And I recognize I'm the very last item and a very long day for you all. So hopefully I can energize you with the positive results and talk about some of the challenge areas and leave you feeling positive as you end your day here. So as he said, I'll be sharing the progress for our key performance indicators for the first quarter. So that is January, February, and March. And we're comparing that to the same time last year. Be talking about the actions that we're taking to drive those results. Also, the committee had asked us to update the online scorecard, so I'll take you on a little tour of what that looks like. And then in closing, I'll talk about some of the things that are on the horizon for performance. So quick snapshot here. The positive news in the measures that we track, which we call our key performance indicators, and that you hold the agency accountable for, we've got some positive news. For that three-month period, we've improved over 2012 in 10 of our measures, as you can see from the snapshot up there. Sure.
When you have color-coded charts and the PowerPoints that wind up in the fourth book are black and white, all of the performance circles
are empty.
Blank.
Okay.
If there's a way to
okay. We'll make sure that now that we have this new red light, green light, we'll make sure that that happens. So all you're looking at is empty circles. So in terms of our key results, you can see the summary of that up there, and I'll briefly go over each of them and share how we've improved our on-time performance by acting strategically, improved our maintenance management, I'm getting it right the first time, and worked better across disciplines to solve problems. And then finally, while most of the results are positive, as you saw, I'll go over some of the challenges that we had with our safety measures. So on-time performance improved across the board. First and foremost, that's important because we've improved over last year on the measures that matter the most to our customers, sorry, elemental to why we're all here, to deliver timely and reliable transit services. If we look at bus on-time performance, it's 2% better than the same time last year. And that's, when I say across the board, I mean 2% system-wide, but we improved at each bus division. And some of the reasons for that are implementation of 19 bus service changes throughout the region. We have effective route and line management through twice daily service checks. We've been using our on-time performance center, I think I've mentioned that a couple times before, to address real-time issues that happen due to unscheduled incidents so that we can react quickly. And we're strategically locating buses throughout the region to respond to service disruptions. And then Mr. Wallace is in the back. Congratulations. His bus fleet continues to perform better and better all the time and is more reliable, traveling an average of 700 more miles compared to last year between failures. He deserves a hand. And that's that reflects an improvement of about 8% over last year. On the rail side, our on-time performance is above target and has improved at 92.2%. That is 3% above last year. And again, with this idea of across the board on all five lines, the on-time performance has improved, and that's due to active management of train spacing and movement of our trains in the yards. And then a really big factor is that last year in January and February, we were doing midday track work, and we are no longer doing that. So that has made a big difference in the on-time performance. And then access on-time performance has remained a little above its contractual target of 92% for those 3 months. Acting strategically helps us respond to conditions faster. So the quarter's performance reflects strategic approaches we're taking. I mentioned some of them already, but on the rail side, our supervisors and superintendents have employed a tool that helps track the movement of trains in the yards and shops. So that allows them to maneuver gap trains, as we call them, and to maintain even train spacing following a delay incident. So, for example, in the quarter, a gap train that was previously located at Alexandria Yard has been relocated to Huntington prior to the start of our AM rush service to quickly respond to yellow and blue line delays. On the bus side, we've got dedicated staff, again, to the on-time performance center that addresses real-time issues. And these type of strategies help our supervisors and our superintendents better place vehicles to respond to disruptions during the day. In addition to strategically placing our vehicles, we also are strategically placing operators in locations on routes, at terminals, and in pocket tracks to enable rapid response to disruptions and to be able to restore service that otherwise would have continued to be unaffected by an incident delay. Tracking submeasures is key to effective maintenance management. Really what that means is that those are measures that they track at the department level that then roll up into a positive result in our key performance indicators. So they provide critical pieces of information to explain our overall service quality measures. And an example would be escalator mean time to repair. So that means how long does it take to repair an escalator once it breaks down. That combined with preventive maintenance compliance, basically, are we getting it right the first time? Are we doing the preventive maintenance work? And meantime, between failures, indicate the overall health of an escalator unit and the impact of good maintenance, as well as our capital replacement program and staffing. So we got an additional 18 new mechanics, and that has really made a difference in our performance. I think that's important to note. If you looked at our one sub-measure, a very important one, preventive maintenance compliance, we really have achieved an unprecedented high of 97% in the quarter. And if you look at the same time last year, it was still high. It was 86, but it's even better now. And if you look at 2 years ago, it was 58%. So together, these measures, again, explain our results in our key performance indicators, which is 90.7%. And I would like to note, because we often see people commenting in blogs and customer complaints that, you know, that's not what I experienced on my journey. So the key performance indicators, as I've said in the past, are really a way for the board and public to track consistent improvement at a system-wide level, and it does not reflect an individual person's experience as they move through the system. So customers that are using the three escalators at Pentagon that are currently being replaced, or if their travel takes them through Reagan Airport, McPherson Square, or seven other stations that are being modernized, they're not going to see that 90.7% availability. But when these projects are completed, they should be able to enjoy that good performance. During the quarter, a third of our escalator out-of-service hours were due to replacement and modernization. Collaboration is fostering better performance, so our Metro team members are working together better across disciplines, and that improves our performance results. They're sharing their successes and solving different problems or challenges, and an example of that is the collaboration between railcar engineering and the car maintenance folks, and that's helped improve the reliability of our 4000 series cars. As you may know, these are unique in our fleet because they operate on a different type of electrical current than the rest of the fleet. What that means is that those cars require more specific and frequent preventive maintenance, and so the engineering folks have documented procedures that help support the maintenance staff to keep the fleet operating successfully. Okay, now on to the more challenge areas. Safety and security measures have shown some challenges. And last time I talked to you, which I think was February, I was reporting on a full year for 2012 and how we were doing. And the good news is that one of my key messages is Metro is safer. And that's still the case. We have been improving year over year. But if we look at kind of a snapshot of just the 3 months, we are having some challenges. The customer injury rate has increased 27% over last year compared to those 3 months in last year, but still better than our target. And what that really equates to is about 26 more customers were injured than they were last year. We've had about 20 bus collisions in the quarter that contributed to injuries, and more than three-fourths of them are not deemed to be our fault. Some of the things that are happening is that when buses are stopped, they're rear-ended by vehicles that are trying to pass them. On the escalator side, we've had some increases in injuries, and that's a big contributor to our customer injury rate, slips, trips, and falls. So 7 more injuries happened on escalators this year than last. Many of these were preventable and occurred while people were walking or rushing on a moving escalator and tripping on the treads. So last month, you heard from Ms. Bowersox about our at the Safety and Security Committee about our new customer safety campaign called Ride Safe. So we're trying to take some of those specific incidents that are happening and communicate to our customers about being more careful. Employee injuries increased 27% compared to last year, led by slips, trips, and falls, and an increase in assault-related injuries on buses. And we have seen a bit of an uptick in stress-related injuries for employees who witness traumatic events. Bus, rail, and MTPD tend to have the greatest number of employee injuries. I think you already heard the report from Chief Pavlik on the crime rate. We had a bit of an uptick on the bus side due to thefts of property escalated by contact with the victim that puts it into a different category. But that's been tempered by some significant improvements in parking lot crime as well as rail crime. So overall, the crime rate is trending good. And moving to our newly redesigned scorecard. This is a scorecard that anyone can access anytime on WMATA.com. And just to kind of show you some of the things that are new. First of all, we've linked it to the Momentum Strategic Goals that you all endorsed. Actually, you adopted a resolution on them. I think it was last September. We are showing the results in the red, green, yellow dots. So red obviously means we're not where we want to be. We're not the same place we were last year, and we're not meeting our target. Yellow is kind of mixed results. We're either not at the same place or not meeting our target. And then green is all good. And we've included some additional measures that we didn't have in our prior scorecard, so the fleet reliability for bus and rail have been added to this one. We provided a link to what our annual targets are, you know, what we're shooting for. And then we continue to have links to our full vital signs report and our annual performance reports if people want to look into the details. And then finally on the horizon, you all have asked for more detailed performance analysis beyond the KPI to look at how our elevator escalator contractors are performing versus our in-house staff. And we are, that analysis is underway, and we're going to be sharing that with the general manager and then back to you all in June timeframe. Starting this summer, as we promised, we'll be back to you with, I'll call it, Rail Service Standards Part 2. You adopted 3 standards for rail service last year, if you call rush period headway, rush period passengers per car, and hours of service, and then you asked us to come back with recommendations for off-peak standards, so we're working on that. We'll be back to you this summer. Title VI also requires the board to adopt some specific service standards and policies for fixed route transit, things like loads, headways, on-time performance, service availability, and then on the policy side, transit amenities and vehicle assignment. So we will, and then you're required to monitor these standards as to how we're doing. So you're doing that as you listen to me now, obviously. So with your previous actions, you've actually already addressed some of these Title VI requirements, and we're looking at where the gaps are. So we'll come back and make sure that you adopt standards in all areas that are required under Title VI. And then finally, in the fall, you'll be seeing a new page in Vital Signs, a customer satisfaction page that will cover the second quarter time frame, April, May, June, and we'll be reporting on the results from our new customer satisfaction surveys. As you know, right now you just see customer commendations and complaints, so this will be more encompassing of satisfaction. So that is my report for the first quarter, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Andrea. Any questions from the committee? Mr. Downs?
First, I know it takes a big team to make these kinds of positive changes in KPIs, but I also know that it takes direct, continuing focus from the guy in charge. I want to thank the general manager for this kind of quarterly performance. One quarter doesn't make a year, but it's a great start. The other is that in June, when you report on ELES contractor versus in-house performance, could you bring the name of the contractor who misordered the parts for the escalator rebuild that was in the report that caused the 9 escalator rebuilds to be dropped from the production schedule this year? I'd love to know who did that.
The company is Konen, K-O-N-E. On that point that Andrea raised, we had a discussion about that, and about in-house versus, and what we're trying to do, and I'm hopeful we can get that in June to the committee, is do an apples to apples. For example, as Andrea pointed out, when they tear out an escalator or replace it, that shouldn't, you know, be part of the apples to apples comparison. But I think the committee's really interested in seeing how that's shaping up in June. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, as we've raised at the Safety Committee this morning, we are concerned about those particular indicators, and on next month's safety agenda, we'll kind of dig in further about what's going on and what we'll do to get back on the curve. The other thing I just would draw attention to, the rail car availability, mean distance between failure numbers are remarkably improved over where they've been, and it makes me feel more confident that we will deliver the service when the Silver Line opens, and I know how much has gone into that, and it's a terrific step forward.
Well, is there any other business to come before the committee? Okay. Committee's adjourned.